smashing her tail into the librarian's chest. The librarian was bigger and stronger, but the Leafwing fought like a cornered tiger. They wrestled furiously around the tiny space, hissing and clawing and kicking at each other, until Sundew suddenly seized the librarian's head and threw her to the floor. She caught one of the Hivewing's wrists as the stinging claws came for her again and snapped the arm bone with a brutal crack. The librarian screamed again and stabbed her back claws into Sundew's underbelly. They rolled into the wall, leaving a smear of blood along the floor.
What would Clearsight think of us? Blue thought with despair. Fighting over her legacy like this. What did she see in this vision, and what did she think of it? Was she proud of the librarian for defending the book? Did she hate us for trying to steal it?
He looked up, as though her spirit might be in the moonstones above them, watching the scene unfold.
I'm sorry, Clearsight, he thought. I never meant to cause trouble like this. I didn't ask for it. I tried to be good.
Something sparked in the stones, a bright reflection that dazzled his eyes for a moment. He looked down and saw where it had come from, an object on the floor that had caught the light of the lantern. A key. The key. It had been torn from the librarian's neck in the struggle with Sundew. He glanced at Cricket, but she was crouched by the door with her talons over her face, and he felt a wave of enormous guilt crash over him. The Queen knew Cricket's secret now, and it was all his fault. Her whole life was going to change, even if they did somehow manage to escape this room. She could never go home. The Queen would want to find her and figure out why she couldn't control her. Queen Wasp had taken Luna's life, and Blue's life, and Cricket's life. She'd taken the free will of her entire tribe. She'd taken the lives of thousands of Leafwings and their beloved trees. It was time someone took something from her. Blue snatched up the key and leaped toward the case. With trembling claws, he fit the key in the lock and turned it.
Please forgive me, Clearsight.
He felt the weight of all the rules he'd never broken settling over his scales and sinking into his heart as he opened the lid of the case. There it was, the real Book of Clearsight. It was much, much smaller than he'd expected, and it wasn't bound in gold either. The leather cover was dyed blue, but had no other decoration. It was soft and worn, as though it had been read a million times. The pages inside were ancient, flaking around the edges and yellowed with age. It smelled like books, and a far-off hint of pine forest. He lifted it gently into his talons.
Wait,
Cricket said, and he turned quickly to her, but she wasn't speaking to him. She was talking to Sundew, who had the librarian pinned against the wall.
Don't kill her, Cricket said.
Why not?
Sundew demanded. Her stomach was bleeding, and her fake wings had been torn off, along with a few of her pouches. She was breathing heavily, raggedly, as was the librarian.
Because she's not the one fighting you, Cricket said.
She took a step closer and peered into the librarian's eyes. The Queen is. Does the Queen control you? All the time? Is that why you always wear the veil? The answering glare was as blank and white as ever.
It would make sense, Cricket said softly. That's the one way to be sure the librarian never reveals the book's secrets. The tribe thinks two dragons share the book's knowledge. But really, only the Queen does, because the librarian isn't herself anymore.
Blue shuddered. He'd thought being trapped in the temple for her whole life was bad enough, but it was even worse. The librarian was trapped in her own mind, unable to get out or make any of her own decisions ever again. Sundew studied the dragon with sharp eyes. I heard rumors that the Hivewing Queen could control her subjects, but I thought they were just stories the old ones made up to frighten us.
The queen and the librarian barked a laugh.
No, she said. It's all true. I can control all of them. That's why every dragon in the hive is on their way to surround the temple right now. I can't move the guards you paralyzed, but I can reach everyone else. The moment you step outside this temple, they will kill you all.
But you're not sending them inside, Cricket murmured. Because you don't want them to know you control the librarian this way.
Let's try something, Sundew said. Hivewing.
It's Cricket, Cricket corrected her.
Cricket, Sundew amended.
And something about using her name made the young Leafwing sound like a real dragon for a moment, not just a swiftly moving ball of fury.
Find my pouch with a large A marked on the outside.
Cricket searched the pouches on the floor, then edged close enough to Sundew to poke through the pouches still clasped around her.
Found it, she said.
Open it very carefully, Sundew instructed, and take out the jar inside. But don't open that until I say so.
Any chance you could be a little more ominous about this?
Cricket asked wryly. She drew out the jar and held it between her front talons.
Now, Sundew said, I want you to open it and shake it out on her tail, then get as far away as you can.
Cricket upended the jar over the librarian and jumped back to Blue's side. Two small black ants fell out, landed on the librarian's tail, and clung to it with their small, wriggling legs. Their antennae searched her scales as though puzzled.
What are you doing? The queen demanded.
When you're inside a dragon, Sundew said, you can feel everything they can, can't you? Or else you wouldn't have screamed when I broke your arm.
Yes, Cricket answered for her. I know she leaves dragons when they're hurt or dying.
Oh, I see your game, the queen scoffed. I can take a lot more pain than a broken arm, though. I'm not afraid of anything you can do to this body.
That may be, said Sundew, but I'm guessing that's because you've never been bitten by a bullet ant before.
Blue had never even heard of a bullet ant, and from her silence, he guessed the queen hadn't either. They all watched the tiny ants circle for a moment and then start climbing up and up the librarian's tail and along her spine. The librarian didn't move, and didn't move, and didn't move. And then, as one of them ran toward her neck, she flicked her wing instinctively to knock it off her. Instead, it latched onto the wingtip and bit down with little pincer jaws. The scream that came out of the librarian was like nothing Blue had ever heard before. She collapsed as though her bones had melted, and Sundew dropped her to the floor, where the dragon lay shaking all over and screaming that terrible scream. Sundew stepped over the patches of blood on the floor, took the jar from Cricket, and neatly scooped up the two ants without letting them touch her. She screwed the lid back on very tightly and packed it away again in her pouch. Then she crouched by the librarian's head and peeled open one of her eyelids.
Had enough? She asked the white eyeball beneath.
This pain is going to last half a day, just so you know. It's not stopping anytime soon.
I'll kill you for this, the queen hissed.
And then abruptly, the eye rolled back and became a normal eye. Dark orange irises and dilated pupils stared up at Sundew. The librarian stopped screaming.
You did it, she said in a strained voice. Ow, ow, ow. I know it's worth it, but ow. It's hard to really know that right now. I tried once before to hurt myself badly enough that she'd set me free, but it didn't work. This is so much worse, though.
She sat up, holding her wing out at an awkward angle and moaning softly.
Is she really gone? Sundew asked.
The librarian nodded.
Yes, for the first time in years.
She inhaled and exhaled slowly, then glanced at her wing and winced again. If she's really gone, then here, Sundew said, digging out a pair of dark green leaves from another pouch. Chew this and spit it on the spot where the ant bit you. It'll deaden the nerve and should dull the pain for a while at least.
Thank you,
the librarian said. She put the leaves in her mouth and started chewing. It'll also make your tongue feel very weird, Sundew added, just to warn you. The librarian agreed, making a face. Has the queen been controlling you all this time? Cricket asked. The librarian nodded, talking awkwardly around the leaves in her mouth.
Ever since the initiation ceremony, I woke up from the ritual with her inside my head. When she sleeps, she makes me sleep. She's always in there. She shuddered. I was so proud to be chosen. I never knew what it would mean. I had no idea she did this.
That's horrible, Blue said softly. The book felt fragile and warm in his talons. He wanted to protect it with all his heart, and he was sure anyone who wanted to be the librarian must feel the same way. They didn't need to be brainwashed into it. Queen Wasp didn't even give them a chance to show their loyalty. She forced it upon them instead. She'll be back in your head as soon as she thinks it's safe, Cricket pointed out.
I know, the librarian said, nodding. But even a moment to be myself is more than I ever thought I'd have again.
She spread the leaf paste over the edge of her wing, and the pain lines around her eyes relaxed.
Oh, thank clear sight.
Sundew glanced across at Blue. So, she said, we have the book, which is great, but we're surrounded by hive zombies who would really like to kill us, which is less great.
Can you throw bullet ants at them? He asked. Or blow dart them?
I don't have many more blow darts, she said, or enough bullet ants for everyone in the whole hive, although that would be my kind of revenge. She started collecting the pouches she'd lost during the fight, checking their contents and resettling them around her. She kicked the pair of fake wings into the corner.
I'll help you, the librarian said quietly.
You will? Blue said, surprised. But we're stealing the book. Your whole purpose in life is to keep it safe.
The librarian looked at the book in his talons, and her eyes were sadder than any dragons he'd ever seen before.
I think it's time someone else knew the book's secrets, she said. And if the queen kills me for it, I'll still be better off than I was this morning.
How can you help us? Sundew asked practically. Is there another way out of here?
Not exactly, she answered. But I can get you up to the dome at least.
The librarian got to her feet, wincing from the other wounds Sundew had given her, and limped to the back corner where she'd first appeared. She couldn't put any weight on her broken arm, and Blue wondered if Sundew felt anywhere near as terrible as he did about that. A secret panel in the wooden wall slid aside at her touch, and they all followed her through into the librarian's quarters. Compared to the other rooms of the temple, this one felt cold and empty. A bamboo mat in a corner and a small bookshelf were the only two items in the room.
It looks like a prison cell, Blue thought.
The position of a librarian was supposed to be the tribe's greatest honor, but instead it was a trick, a snare set to trap one of the brightest minds of the hive wings and keep her useless forever. Another panel slid aside to reveal a spiral staircase going up. They climbed after the librarian, rounding the last curve to find themselves in an attic that smelled of wood chips and boiled silk. The underside of the dome curved over their heads, and Blue saw a door on one side that led to a small balcony.
What was this for? Cricket asked, blinking around at the dust and abandoned boxes.
She picked up an odd-looking tool that looked a bit like a curved dragon tongue.
I think librarians used to make books up here, the librarian said wistfully.
Oh, Cricket said. She ran one claw along the top of a dusty table. That's what I thought they did, too.
Not anymore. Not in a long time.
The librarian led the way to the balcony door and peeked out through the glass.
Oh, dear.
Sundew edged in beside her and looked out as well.
Humph, she snorted. I can take them.
Every hive wing and wasp hive? Cricket said. You are terrifying, but I still find that a little hard to believe.
Unless you have something else alarming in one of those pouches, Blue said hopefully.
Sundew tapped the floor thoughtfully with one claw.
Maybe, she said, but I'd need fire to make it work.
I have fire, Cricket said. She scrambled to pull out the little stone jar with a flame silk thread inside and tipped it to show Sundew.
Would this work?
The leafwing's eyes gleamed.
I think so.
Be careful, the librarian pleaded as Sundew took the jar in her claws. Don't set the temple on fire. You can have the book, but please leave the temple.
Sundew hesitated, as though she would have loved to set the whole hive on fire. But after a moment, she nodded.
Stand back.
She took a branch covered with long, waxy-looking red-brown leaves out of another pouch. With careful, slow movements, she dipped the point of each one into the jar until it touched the flame silk and caught fire. A bright flame flared for a moment on each leaf, then vanished into curls of reddish smoke. Sundew handed the jar back to Cricket and opened the door to the balcony, holding the burning branch out away from her. Now Blue could see the temple grounds, and the hive wings who covered every inch of space between the temple and the door. Orange, yellow, red, and black scales rippled like a vast sea of poisonous snakes. As Sundew stepped onto the balcony of the dome, every head snapped toward her in unison, blank eyes latching onto her. One branch of burning leaves seemed very small in the face of all those talons and teeth and claws. Blue shivered, and he felt Cricket put one wing over his back and lean against him.
I should be comforting her, he thought. I'm the one who's ruined her life.
But if she was still willing to be close to him, perhaps she forgave him. Perhaps she still liked him anyway. Sundew hissed at the crowd of hive wings. Smoke was rolling off the leaves now, growing thicker and thicker and redder and darker. She glanced at it one more time, checking that it was all smoke and no flames, and then she threw it with all her might directly into the middle of the watching dragons. It hit a yellow-black dragon, who shook it off and hopped away with a yelp. The dragons closest to him began coughing. They sank to the ground, one by one, hacking and wheezing as the smoke billowed up and out, swallowing the dragons around it. But it wasn't enough. For each hive wing incapacitated by the smoke, there were five more still grimly standing between them and the only way out.
Capture the flame silk, they intoned. Kill the other two.
The buzz of their wings filled the chamber, as dragon after dragon rose into the air and surged toward the dome. Blue's heartbeat surged with panic.
Wait, that's not the only way out.
He looked up. There was the skylight and the stars far above them. The hole was barely large enough for a dragon to fit through, but he and Cricket and Sundew were all fairly small. If they could break the glass at the top, they could at least get outside the hive.
Up, he shouted, grabbing Cricket's arm and pointing. We can go out the skylight.
She followed his gaze, then looked back at him. What about you? She asked. How do we get you up there?
Oh.
He twisted to look back at his wing buds, as though perhaps they'd have magically turned into wings in the last several heartbeats.
We'll carry him.
Sundew threw open her wings and leaped up off the balcony.
Let's go, and hold on to that book.
She started smashing hive wings aside with her tail and talons. He clutched the book to his chest, Cricket whirled around in a panic and grabbed a long, twisted silk rope from one of the tables. She and the librarian threw it around Blue's shoulders and chest and tied it fast. They each took an end and ran to the balcony.
I wish I had wings, Blue thought, closing his eyes. I wish I were more than a dead weight for my friends to drag around.
The rope jerked tight under his arms, and he was dragged smack into the balcony railing, nearly tumbling over it, before the rope steadied and he felt himself lifted up, up into the air. He tilted sideways almost immediately as the librarian's bigger wings soared ahead, and Cricket faltered under his weight. Then Sundew swept up beside her and took the rope as well, tugging him upright. All he could do was dangle helplessly, holding on to the book for dear life. Right below his talons, the smoke still billowed, and the seething mass of hive wings snapped and churned. Three of them surged toward his feet, and he kicked at them frantically.
"Ack! Help!"
he shouted. A cascade of little red centipedes poured down from above him. Each dragon they struck let out a shriek of alarm or pain and dropped away, clawing at his face. The dome was shrinking below him. Blue looked up and saw Sundew, then Cricket duck into the skylight hole. The librarian was hovering beside it, taking up the slack in his rope, waiting to let them go first. And then suddenly, she looked down at him, and her eyes were wide again.
"Nice try," she said.
"Cricket!" Blue screamed. The librarian's claws slashed through the rope connecting him to his friends. He tumbled sideways, jerking to a stop at the end of the severed rope, but feeling the knots start to slip loose around his chest. Cricket shot back down the shaft and flew at the librarian's face. The librarian ducked away, gave her an evil grin, and let Blue's rope fall from her hands. His stomach flipped as he started to plummet, then jerked to a stop again as Cricket caught the end of the rope. But she wasn't strong enough to lift him alone. Even with her wings beating as hard as she could, they were both sinking down toward the hive wings.
"Cricket," he yelled, "you have to go without me. They won't kill me, but they're under orders to kill you. Take the book and go."
"I'm not..." she started to shout back, but he was already tossing the book up toward her. She had to drop the rope to catch it. She did it instinctively, as he'd known she would. She was as well trained to love the book as he was. All their lives they'd known it was the most precious object in their world. She'd reach for it without thinking, even if her conscious mind would have chosen to save Blue instead. As he fell, as a thousand claws reached up to seize him, he saw Cricket clutch the book to her chest and shout his name. He saw Sundew pummel the librarian hard enough to knock the hive wing out of the air. He saw Sundew grab Cricket's arm and pull her away. And he saw Cricket's last look back. And he saw their tails disappearing away up the skylight. And then, all he could see was orange and yellow and black and red as the talons closed around him. And the queen had him in her grasp at last. Part 3. Metamorphosis. Chapter 22. Blue was dragged roughly through the hive tunnels. The queen had dispatched 5 dragons to take him away, which was 4 too many for a dragon as harmless as Blue. They kept stepping on one another's toes, and growling, and bumping wings, and all trying to hold on to his elbows at once, which he definitely did not have enough elbows for them to do. Their eyes were their own again, so the queen had apparently decided she didn't need to be concerned about Blue anymore, which meant all the rest of her brainwashed subjects were off hunting for Cricket and Sundew.
Did they get away? Are they all right?
He worried and worried about this as he was shoved between blustering hive wings. They were descending through the levels, but to where, Blue had no idea. He kept expecting the queen herself to appear. He jumped each time they turned onto a level with black and yellow stripes. They reached the bottom level with no sign of her, though. The guards pushed him out into the streets of warehouses he'd seen on the way in. One flicked her wings at him, and he realized the tips were sharp little stingers, probably venomous. Another kept baring his fangs, so those could probably kill him with just a scratch, too.
"Where are they taking me?" Blue wondered, staring at the blank walls as they marched past. "How am I going to be punished?"
He remembered the tortured faces on Misbehavior's way and shivered. This feeling of being in trouble, of having done something wrong, of knowing so many dragons were angry at you. This was everything he'd tried to avoid his whole life. He hated it. He wanted to go back to his desk and get all the answers right on the quiz and have the teacher smile and say, "Nice work, Blue." He wanted to dig out his good citizenship award and show it to these hive wings to prove he wasn't as bad a dragon as they thought he was.
"But I'm not.
I mean, I've done all the things they think I have, but that doesn't make me bad." He clung to that thought like it was a harness and someone was lifting him through the sky. "Yes, I broke hive wing rules, but I had good reasons to. I'm not trying to hurt anyone. I just wanted to find my sister and set her free." Queen Wasp didn't have to be so secretive and menacing and terrifying in the first place. The hive wing stopped suddenly in front of a blocky building that looked exactly the same as all the others. The only difference was a carving on the gray door, this time of a small lantern, little sparks coming off it to indicate it was glowing. Blue suddenly had a guess about where he was going. One of the hive wings pounded on the door in a series of knocks. Three quick, four slow, two quick. After a moment, it was flung open, revealing a wizened, mostly orange dragon with black patches here and there. He gestured for them to come inside and slammed the door behind them. Shapes loomed around them in the dim interior. Giant crates, as far as Blue could tell, stacked up to the ceiling. They maneuvered between these, left, right, right, left again, until Blue lost track. But he thought they were about in the center of the warehouse when they reached a wide-open, well-lit space surrounded by a circle of watchful hive-wing guards. At first, Blue thought they were staring into empty space, or perhaps at one another across the way. It wasn't until he got closer that he realized they were looking down. Down through an enormous sheet of glass at a stone cavern below the floor. That was also where all the light was coming from. The dragon from the door shoved him past the guards before Blue could take a close look, but he caught a glimpse of cauldrons that seemed to be full of molten gold and dragons moving between them. Shortly beyond the circle of guards, the old dragon shoved aside a crate and heaved open a trap door underneath, revealing a set of stairs descending into the earth. He started down, and Blue's guards nudged him into following. Lamps punctuated the turns of the stairwell, but they seemed unnecessary. The glow from the light at the bottom of the stairs could have illuminated a stairwell three times as long. Blue had to shield his eyes and blink hard for a moment when they reached the bottom. His head ached, as though he'd walked right up to the sun.
"What's this?"
a gruff voice demanded, while Blue's eyes were still adjusting.
"The flame silk everyone's been looking for," came the answer. "Can't be,"
someone poked his shoulder.
"Wrong color. Ah! Did his scales just fall off?"
"It's paint or something," said another dragon. She started scraping at his scales with her claws. "Yeesh! Look, it comes off. That's a scrubber."
"Wait, this little scrap is the dragon we've been hunting across the savannah?"
Someone else chimed in.
"He's not a flame silk. He hasn't even got wings or silk yet." We knew that, idiot, said the first voice. He's just probably a flame silk. We have to keep an eye on him in case he is.
Oh, boring. When's his metamorphosis?
Dunno. Soon, I reckon.
Blue's heart gave a nervous jump. It was soon. Really, really soon. He kept forgetting to worry about it. His was supposed to start right after Luna's ended. Would he have to spin his cocoon here? Far away from his mother, his hive, and the cocoon where he'd always expected to transform? He felt his wrist gingerly. They seemed normal. No pain, no burning feelings. What if he went through his metamorphosis and wasn't a flame silk? What would the queen do with him then? Sending him back home to Burnet and Silverspot didn't seem like the most likely option somehow. Someone arrived with scrubbing brushes and briskly scoured the paint off his scales. He stood still and didn't struggle. There wasn't much point in being a different color now, after all. Besides, his eyes were finally adjusting to the light, and he was transfixed by his new surroundings. They were standing on a ledge at the bottom of the stairs, looking out over the cave he'd glimpsed from above. If he looked up, he could see the green, yellow, orange glow of the eyes watching through the glass ceiling. More hive-wing guards were stationed down here, peering into the cauldrons and occasionally poking the working silkwings with their tails or spears. Several of those silkwings were ordinary dragons, doing ordinary work, transporting cargo, carrying food and water, cleaning, putting out fires. But the rest were flame silks. Blue counted 9 at first glance. They were scattered across the cavern, each on his or her own rocky perch. 4 of them were asleep. 2 were eating. The other 3 had their wrists extended, fiery silk threads spilling out into the massive stone cauldrons set below them. He stared at them, trying to guess which one was his father. The large, bored one who looked like he might fall asleep and topple into his own silk fire? The lime-striped one, who was nibbling a persimmon as though it had greatly offended him, but he decided to eat it anyway? The one with pale pink wings whose talons twitched constantly in his sleep? And then, at last, he saw what he most wanted to see. An incandescent gold cocoon, tucked in its own hollow on the far side of the cave. Luna. He took a step toward her, hesitated, and looked back at the guards. The scrubbing brushes had been carted away. His original escorts had gone back up the stairs, leaving the one guard from the door and the 3 who'd come to investigate his arrival. These 4 were all leaning on their spears or chewing on strips of dried gazelle, chatting to one another. One of them noticed his glance. She grinned at him with all her teeth. "Go ahead," she said. "Get used to the place. I gather you're going to be here for a while." The others chuckled, although Blue didn't think it was really the most clever, menacing comment she could have come up with. He took another few steps away, but they all went back to their conversation and ignored him.
"I guess I really can walk around."
He'd expected a cage, or a paralyzing nerve toxin, or some kind of beating, perhaps. But maybe this was the Queen's way of letting him know how unimportant he was. Or how trapped. He could wander as far as he liked, because there was nowhere to go and no way out. Blue clambered down from the ledge, hopping from rocky foothold to craggy stalagmite, until he reached the same level of the cavern as Luna's cocoon. Behind him, he heard the hive-wing guards laughing, and he wondered if they were mocking his winglessness.
"Well, I won't be wingless much longer."
His biggest fear, his metamorphosis, was only days away. It didn't seem fair that he'd have to deal with that, too, in the middle of everything else terrifying. His route to the cocoon led him past the bored-looking flame silk, who glanced up with a spark of interest in his eyes.
Hey,
said the flame silk in a lazy but commanding voice.
Who are you?
Blue hesitated. He didn't want to alienate anyone who might be a friend down here. And for all he knew, this could be Admiral.
I'm Blue, he said. My sister's in that cocoon over there.
Oh, said the other dragon. He shook one of his wrists vigorously, watched the silk spool for a moment, then turned his gaze back to Blue.
Right. The new blood. Did you know we were coming?
Blue asked.
Some of us hoped, he answered. Ad's been counting the days.
He nodded over at Luna's cocoon, and Blue finally noticed that there was a dragon sitting next to it.
Ad. Admiral.
Blue moved forward, studying his father. Admiral was a shimmering blue-green, somewhere between Blue's bright morpho butterfly blue and Luna's elegant caterpillar color. He had darker purple streaks along his wings and matching spots of white on each one. His eyes were brown, with a faint gold tinge to them, and he traced one claw around and around in an infinity loop on the ground as he watched Luna's cocoon. For a long moment, he didn't look up, even when Blue stopped right across the cocoon from him. But at last, Admiral raised his head and saw his son. His eyes lit up.
You're the other one, he said. You're early.
Oh, yes, Blue said. He gestured vaguely at the guards on the entrance ledge.
I was, well, captured, I guess. I'm so glad you're here, Admiral said warmly. I'm your father. I'm Admiral. I know, Blue said. My name's Blue.
Wait,
you're glad we're here?
Glad that Luna and I are trapped down here, just like you?
We have such an important job, Admiral said, rubbing his wrists. So important. When do you think she'll wake up?
Blue calculated backward.
Not tomorrow night. The night after that, he said. That would be 5 days from when she went in.
Admiral nodded.
I can't believe one of mine is a flame silk, he said. And maybe both. Clubtail was taken out to have eggs a year before me, but neither of his had any flame whatsoever.
His chest swelled with pride. But, Blue looked around at the cavern again.
Isn't it, sorry, but isn't it kind of terrible, being a flame silk? Terrible? Gosh, no, said Admiral. I mean, I'd make some changes. I'm working on that.
Working on what? Blue asked. Was his father also part of a secret resistance? Admiral waved at a rocky nest nearby, where piles of papers were neatly stacked along the stone shelves around it, each stack tied with a pale gold thread.
Changing the system, he said. Solving problems.
With
papers?
Blue squinted at them.
They're letters, Admiral said patiently. My copies of them, obviously. I write one to the Queen every 7 days, outlining the current problems I see and offering proposals for fixing them.
Oh, Blue said, impressed. That was a lot of letters.
So she writes back? Or she comes to visit you? Well, neither, said Admiral. But she's very busy. Lots of hives to run. 2 tribes to manage. Leaf wings to guard against. The dip in flame silk production is just one of her many problems, which I'm going to help solve.
There's a flame silk shortage? Blue said.
No, said Admiral unconvincingly. And it's not a problem, because we're solving it. With her help, he added, nodding at Luna's cocoon. And hopefully yours.
Blue stared at him in alarm.
Was this your idea? He asked. Fathering potential flame silks so more dragons could be trapped in this cave? Well, no,
his father admitted. The queen came up with that. Very clever. And works out well for me because, A, better company, and B, more signatures for my petitions.
Petitions, Blue echoed. My suggestion was longer rest cycles between production and more citrus in our diet, which we got. The citrus, I mean. Tangerines for everyone with every meal.
Every meal.
Really makes you wish for a lemon or a banana now and then. Good for us, though. She vetoed the longer rest cycles. That's all right.
So, what else have you changed? Blue asked.
Oh, lots of things, Admiral said with a modest shrug. I started almost as soon as I got here. Once I realized there was a system, and a way to accomplish real change within that system.
Yeah? Blue was intrigued. Doing things inside the rules? That sounded like something he could handle a bit better than Swordtail and Luna's revolution. Maybe his father could teach him how to do it. Maybe there was a way to be a good dragon, stay out of trouble, and still make things better. Although, tangerines were not quite the epic change Blue wanted to see in the world.
Can I read some of your letters? Blue asked.
Of course. Admiral leaped excitedly to his feet and bounded over to his alcove. He came back with an armful of papers and laid them out in front of Blue.
Wait. Is this flame silk? Blue asked, touching the thread that tied one stack together.
He squinted at it, puzzled.
Why isn't it setting the letters on fire?
Admiral laughed.
This is great, he said. I feel like such a dad. I get to teach you so much. There are different kinds of flame silk, buddy. It wouldn't be much good to us if it only burned everything in sight. We need the kind for building webs, too. Something we can sleep on. Stickier silk for climbing with. We can choose which kind we produce.
He tipped his wrists up, flexed his claws, and glanced at the nearest guard, who wasn't paying any attention to them.
I'll show you later. Not a good idea to waste any silk, you know?
Blue flipped through the letters, thinking about this new information. It was quite a relief to hear that he wouldn't accidentally set the world on fire every time he used his silk. Maybe going through metamorphosis with his flame silk parent nearby actually was a good idea.
Maybe the queen was trying to help me and Luna by bringing us here.
And yet, he glanced around at the cavern. The flame silk dragons looked fine. They didn't seem miserable. But if they were so important, and the queen was willing to listen to them, why were they kept imprisoned in this cavern? Why were they such a big secret, at least from most other silkwings? Why weren't they allowed to choose this life, or something else?
Father, Blue said, do any flame silks ever leave this place?
Sure, Admiral said unexpectedly.
I mean, I left, didn't I? Long enough to have you.
Right, but how long was that for? Blue asked.
Did you get to decide when and where you went, or who you were with?
Well, no, Admiral said, but it was a lovely visit. Cicada Hive is so pretty. That mosaic garden, wow.
Have you gone anywhere else? Blue asked. How often do you leave?
Admiral scrunched up his snout, as though he was counting in his head. Blue leaned forward hopefully.
Right. That was it, actually. That one time.
In your whole life? Blue asked, dismayed.
You've spent your whole life in this one cave?
Oh, no, said Admiral. I grew up in Hornet Hive. Didn't move here until my metamorphosis. Went into my cocoon there, woke up here. Quite a surprise. Really delightful, once I realized how important we are and what an honor this is.
Blue regarded him skeptically. Haven't you ever asked the queen if you could leave?
Sure, Admiral said. That stack on the end is vacation time requests
and field trip proposals, and some of my theories on how more flying might improve our silk production. Afraid I don't have any good evidence for that, though. More of a wishful thinking kind of hypothesis. I realize that. Completely reasonable that she always says no.
Blue picked up another letter. His father's handwriting was neat and very legible. His spelling was perfect. His sentences concise and convincing. This one was a politely worded outline of a proposal for a skylight, or anything like a window, suggesting that a little sun on their scales might also be beneficial for their silk output. There were several letters below it along the same lines, with modifications to the proposal to make it as cost-effective or easy to accomplish as possible. One even included a drawing of a sequence of mirrors that could bring the sunshine to them via a long path of reflections. Blue could clearly see, from looking at the cavern, that every one of these letters had been ignored.
"Who's the midget?"
One of the other flame silks, the one with green stripes, shouted at Admiral.
"Is that your offspring? He's scrawny like you. Is he a vacuous earthworm, too?" "Mind your own business," Admiral roared. "He doesn't need to hear your toad-sucking voice." "Better than your millipedian claw-waving falderall," the dragon yelled. "Are you poisoning his ears with your stupid ideas already? Did you tell him the queen chews up all your letters and spits them out because they're the dumbest thing she's ever read?" "That's not true. And it would help if certain dragons weren't such trolls about everything," Admiral yelled back. "As if anyone would ever believe that less citrus might be helpful. I swear," he said to Blue. "I think he sneaks over and reads my letters, just so he can write ones arguing for the exact opposite of anything I propose."
"Who is that?" Blue asked, wide-eyed. "Why is he so mean?"
"That's fritillery," Admiral growled. "He just wants everyone to hate the world as much as he does. Don't talk to him."
He made an effort to smile at Blue.
"See? This is why I'm glad you're here. It'll be nice to have someone new to talk to. Someone with a little perspective. Someone who knows how to look on the bright side." "You do know how to look on the bright side, don't you?"
"I guess I do," Blue said. Wasn't that what he'd spent his whole life doing? Finding a silver lining to any cloud? Convincing himself that there was nothing wrong with how silkwings were treated, ignoring Luna's complaints, assuming that their safety was worth sacrificing a few freedoms. He looked down at the letters in his talons again. After all these years of trying to work with Queen Wasp's rules, in Queen Wasp's hive, under Queen Wasp's control, had his father accomplished no more than a handful of tangerines? Had he accepted the loss of all his freedom because he thought he could find a way to make it work? Didn't he want more out of his life? Didn't he want to fight back? "Do I?" It was like Cricket said. Some rules were unjust, and some things were more important than following the rules. He put down the letters and rested his front talons on Luna's warm golden cocoon. It was very hot, but it didn't burn him.
"This is not going to be our life, Luna," he promised silently. "I won't spend the next 100 years writing fruitless letters. Father's way, obeying the system, hasn't worked. So we'll find another. Or we'll burn it all down."
Chapter 23 Admiral found a place for Blue close to his own nest, a hollow in the rock large enough for a dragon to settle into, with several crannies in the wall where he could keep things, if he ever had any things. Apparently there was a request process involving a number of forms. At first the hollow seemed a little too big to Blue, and then he felt a shiver across his wings, as he realized his father was thinking of Blue's future and how much bigger he might grow.
Admiral had chosen a nest where Blue could spend the entire rest of his life.
But I'm not going to. That's not going to happen.
He tried to believe it as he lay down to sleep, but his dreams were restless and unhappy. He dreamed of getting his talons stuck in a crevice and trying to pull them out. He dreamed of letters piling up around his claws. He dreamed of Clearsight, sitting on the steps of her temple, looking down at him with enormous disappointment. When he woke up, his wrists were itching.
Am I going to be a flame silk?
The cavern was quiet. Most of the regular silkwings were gone, and 7 of the flame silks were asleep. Blue climbed down to Luna's cocoon and leaned against it. He wished he could talk to his sister, or Cricket.
Is Cricket all right? Did she escape?
Or... His mind shied away from the alternative. He couldn't imagine the world without Cricket in it. He couldn't imagine his own life without Cricket in it. A hive-wing guard came stomping over, and Blue sat up hopefully. Maybe this dragon could tell him something about what had happened. But the guard went right past him and jabbed Admiral in the side with one of her sharp claws. Admiral woke up with a snort, blinking rapidly.
Time to spin, the guard snarled. You're late.
So sorry, Admiral said, rubbing his eyes. You're quite right. I've been a little discombobulated by the arrival of my children, of course. Otherwise, I'm always on time, aren't I? Very punctual dragon, that's me. Very little reminding required. Don't you agree?
Quit your yapping and excusing, the guard grumbled. Silk, now.
She dragged a cauldron out from under Admiral's nest and thunked it into place right below Admiral.
Of course.
Admiral held out his arms and closed his eyes. A long, dragging moment passed, and then a thread of flame emerged from one wrist. It spiraled down into the cauldron, pouring slowly, like cold honey. It was another long moment before a second thread appeared from the other wrist, and this one seemed dimmer than the first. The guard scowled at the slow-moving silk, and Blue wondered what she was feeling. Was she worried about what would happen to the hives if there was a flame silk shortage? Or did the guards get punished if the flame silks didn't meet a certain quota? Or was there any chance she was actually concerned about the dragons under her charge?
What a weird life this would be, he thought. Every morning, you wake up and go through a secret warehouse staircase into an underground cavern. You spend the day poking other dragons to make them work and standing guard so they can't leave. Isn't it boring? It must be boring. Especially for the one sitting in a circle in the dark warehouse, staring through the glass all day.
The hivewing turned to leave, and Admiral's eyes popped open.
Sandfly, he said quickly. Have you met my son? This is Blue. He says my daughter's name is Luna, and she'll be coming out tomorrow night. With her wings! And silk to add to the quota. Isn't that wonderful?
Sandfly looked down at Blue and the gold cocoon. She didn't say anything for a few heartbeats. Her scales were pale yellow and speckled everywhere with tiny black spots, like a swarm of flies in the desert. It was easy to see how her parents had chosen her name.
They're very young, she said at length.
Blue couldn't tell if she was feeling sorry for them, with a life of imprisonment lying ahead, or if she was pleased at the idea of how much silk they'd be able to produce over the length of that life.
Excuse me, he said. I'm sorry to bother you, but I was wondering, do you know what happened to the dragons who stole the Book of Clearsight yesterday?
Sandfly leaped backward, as though he'd jabbed her with an electric eel.
What?
She roared. Half of the sleeping heads in the cavern popped up and turned their way.
That didn't happen. No one would dare.
Oh,
Blue trailed off. It hadn't occurred to him that the queen would lie to everyone about this, and make the librarian lie too. But now that he thought about it, he wasn't surprised. Losing the Book of Clearsight would be pretty terrible for morale. She could easily just close up the case and pretend it was still in there. That is, if Cricket and Sundew did escape with a book.
"What a horrible thing to say!" Sandfly barked.
Behind her, Admiral gave Blue a pained, "fix this" expression.
"I'm sorry," Blue said. "I'm so sorry. I meant the dragons who tried to steal the Book of Clearsight. Of course the librarian stopped them. Of course it's safe. Those dragons, though, do you know if they got away?"
Sandfly was shaking out her wings as though they were crawling with caterpillars.
"Ugh," she said. "I'm going to have nightmares for days. What kind of traitor would steal the Book of Clearsight? That's so obviously wrong."
So obviously wrong. Blue stared down at his talons. The talons that had unlocked the case and lifted out the precious book.
"It was me. I'm the traitor."
But the librarian had wanted them to have it when she was herself. She'd said it was time for other dragons to know the book's secrets. He decided not to mention that, in case Sandfly had another heart attack. He was also carefully avoiding the fact that one of the criminal dragons was a leafwing, in case that wasn't public knowledge and might set off a riot.
"Right," he said, trying one more time. "So the queen really wanted to catch them. But did she?"
"I have no idea," Sandfly said. She settled her wings again. "I was down here until midnight last night. No one at home mentioned any public executions yesterday, but maybe they'll be held today or tomorrow." Blue managed not to gasp or burst into tears.
"She assumes they were caught because she's a hive wing, but she doesn't actually know. They might be safe.
Or they might be in another prison somewhere, waiting to be executed." If only he could escape and go look for them. But he didn't have Cricket's clever ideas, or Swordtail's impulsive courage, or Sundew's helpful pouches of weapons. He was just a little wingless dragon stuck in a cavern of flame. Still, he could at least try. Blue spent the rest of the day exploring every corner of the Flame Silk Cave. He walked the entire perimeter, clambering up and down the rocks wherever he needed to. The guards by the staircase gave him weird looks as he went by, but they didn't stop him. Nobody stopped him. Although he got the distinct feeling that all the Flame Silks were watching him whenever they thought he wasn't looking. There were 3 female Flame Silks and 7 males, most of them quite a lot older than Blue. He guessed that Admiral might be the youngest one the Queen had. A couple of them seemed to stay in their nests all the time, cycling between sleeping, eating, and producing silk, without ever moving from their spots. He saw a few others get up and fly around, although they couldn't go far. There was enough room to spread their wings, but they couldn't soar, and there wasn't any wind to ride.
"If this is my future, will I never get to fly in the clouds? How will I ever learn to fly properly, without any wind currents down here?"
The guards and the Flame Silks seemed to have a very precise schedule in their heads. They rotated production cycles and rest intervals in careful synchronization, so there were always at least 3 Flame Silks working, even in the middle of the night. Blue had covered almost the entire cave by the time his father's turn at the cauldron was done. There were a few ledges and corners that he hadn't figured out how to climb up to yet, but he had walked between all the stalagmites and surreptitiously poked his nose in every large gap in the rocks. So far, he hadn't found any secret passages, though. From across the cave, he saw Sandfly drop a bucket of food beside Admiral and roll the cauldron away. He started back, his head full of questions.
"Hello, dear," one of the Flame Silks said, popping her head over the edge of her nest just as he was about to pass her.
He jumped, and she giggled.
"I'm Danaid.
My, aren't you a shiny one? We haven't